Duke's Mayo. Do you get it? Because only the ones that get it really get it. Your friends get it. Your mom gets it. Your grandma gets it. Your neighbors get it. Sometimes a dog gets it. Get out of there. What else? Your potato salads get it. BLTs get it. Tailgates get it. And restaurants get it too. By now, even you probably get it. So get it today. Made without any sugar since 1917, Duke's is that little southern something that makes good things better. Get Duke's. It's got twang.
This episode, and every episode of the Beer Guys Radio Show, is brought to you by Ironmonger Brewing. Visit Ironmonger at their tap room in Marietta, Georgia, or online at ironmongerbrewing.com.
Open up a tab, grab a seat, and pour a pint. It's time for the Beer Guys Radio Show.
You want free beer? Go to the brewery.
Dedicated to the art, science, and enjoyment of craft beer.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got?
Now, here are your hosts, Tim Dennis and Brian Hewitt.
And welcome to the Beer Guys Radio Show. We're broadcasting from the Beer Guys Radio Studios in Marietta, Georgia. And this week we're talking with New Glarus Brewing. With me, as always, is my good friend and co-host, Brian Hewitt.
Hey, Tim. Joining us today, we have Daniel Carey, the brewmaster of New Glarus Brewing. We're going to talk about a lot of different things. Fruits and beers, responsible businesses.
Sour beer from long times ago, responsible business practices.
Possibly caves. Caves might come up.
So many good topics. Daniel, thank you so much for joining us today.
It's my pleasure.
Daniel, we are currently drinking, correct me on the pronunciation, is it Ufta or Ufta?
Ufta. Ufta is a Norwegian expletive.
Norwegian expletive. Okay. I don't think we have to bleep those out on the show. I think we can get away with Norwegian.
Yeah, right.
Well, can you tell us a little bit about this beer?
Well, first of all, the word Ufta is kind of a northern climate. People in Michigan and Wisconsin say it. It refers to, like, if you stub your toe or you walk outside and it's really cold, you say Ufta. So it's kind of a colloquial word, and it's a little bit of a joke around here because we're in a Swiss town and we're surrounded by Norwegians. My wife's Norwegian, so it's kind of the Swiss are a little bit, dare I say, think they're a little bit better than everybody else. So the Norwegians are the poor farmers. So being in a Swiss town, we named it with a Norwegian expletive as sort of a joke. But Ufta Bock is one of the first beers that we brewed. I'm really, by training, by experience, a lager brewer. So Ufta Bock was, I think, probably the second beer that we ever brewed 26 years ago. And it was meant to be more or less a traditional German-style dark Bock beer. But, of course, it's made with a little bit of an American twist.
So I have to wonder, looking at it, tasting it, is there decoction mash involved in this? Because
why do you say that?
I just think that the richness, some of the flavor coming out, it just seems that it must have come from that. But
That's pretty funny. Every once in a while, somebody asks me that. Very, very rarely do people ask me that. But yeah, it's a double decoction.
All right. Okay. So I was on something.
There you go. 1 point for Brian there. Absolutely. Yeah.
I finally win something.
Yes, absolutely. Now, Daniel, we're just coming off a Super Bowl weekend here. Did you watch the Super Bowl?
No, I didn't. I went for a run. I like to run, and usually Super Bowl Sunday is the best day because it's like a zombie apocalypse out in the world.
That sounds like a good time to. If you're a runner, that's a perfect time to go then.
Yeah.
But you missed out on the great beer commercials then as well.
Yeah, I heard about them. I did hear about them, though.
Yeah. So, Brian, you saw the beer commercials, correct?
I did. I saw a number of them, yes.
So, the hot topic this year, because every year AB InBev does something that gets people worked up. I think it was a couple years ago, it was the pumpkin peach.
Yeah, right. Right.
This was right after they'd bought a brewery that had a pumpkin peach beer. And this year, it's all about corn syrup hate, Brian.
Yes.
So, they had their medieval kings, whatever, that received a large barrel of corn syrup. And said that we don't brew with corn syrup. So they had to take it to the Miller Castle.
The next kingdom.
And the Coors Kingdom. So, but interestingly enough, they snub their nose at corn, but they're okay with rice.
Yeah, they are.
That's fine.
Well, they do use corn. They use corn grits. The Bush beers. You're splitting hairs here, but all of the Bush, the lesser priced beers when I was there in 27 years ago, 26 years ago, the lesser beers like Busch and that, those Natural Light, those are the corn beers, and then the Bud, the higher premium beers are made with rice. So yeah, they use corn grits, but not corn syrup.
So, Daniel, do you know, as far as that's concerned, is there really much of a difference in using, say, corn syrup or corn versus rice as a fermentable in a beer?
Well, you know, everything makes a subtle difference in the beer, and rice is generally considered to be a little bit crisper. Brewers might say faster. Corn is a little bit fuller in body, maybe a little bit sweeter. But it's really not a huge difference. They're both used to dilute down the malt, the barley.
So the end product from both would be, from a health standpoint, which is I think what they were appealing to, it's going to be roughly the same, right?
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah, that's right. Well, it's a little bit of a it was kind of I would and I'm not I don't think it's wrong for me to say shame on Anheuser-Busch. They know better than that. It's a marketing scam because the corn syrup is fermented out. It's not that they're adding corn syrup to the beer that's causing calories per se as sugar. It's fermented. So whether you use rice, corn grits, or wheat, or corn syrup, I think that you're going to have the same outcome, which is to dilute the flavor of the beer.
But they're masters of marketing. They know how to spin it and to
it's kind of a snitty thing to do. I think they would have been smarter talking about why their beer is high quality rather than why their neighbors are using something that's assumed to be bad.
Right. And you know, one thing I thought was interesting too is the first commercial that AB InBev ran during the Super Bowl was for a spiked seltzer. Bon and Viv sparkling seltzer. So interesting that they would choose a Super Bowl audience.
You know, Tim, I think it's time for the beers of the week.
Crack open a cold one. It's the Truck and Tap Beer of the Week. Woo-hoo! Craft beer and food trucks in downtown Woodstock. Truckandtap.com.
Well, Brian, as always, we have some fantastic beers to get into this week. We pre-gamed with one of our beers, Brian, the collaboration that we had done with Reformation Brewery, our Struzu. Still had some of those in the refrigerator, so we opened one up and enjoyed that. Our fruited Berliner with some strawberry and yuzu fruit in it. And of course, we have been drinking and we're going to continue to drink some good New Glarus beers. Ooh. We've already enjoyed the Ufta Bock. We're going to get into the 2019 Flanders Sour, the 25th Anniversary Ale, which is a Belgian quad. And Smalls was nice enough to bring us a bottle of her Serendipity.
Yeah, I had one in my cellar from the last time I was in Wisconsin and brought a whole suitcase full of New Glarus.
Good, good.
So. Wow. That's a great thank beer. You. Yep.
Looking forward to getting.
I'm excited. I think that might be my favorite beer of yours. I haven't had them all.
Oh, cool.
I think it might be my favorite.
Yeah, cool. Absolutely. Well, Brian, what's happening this week in the news?
What's in the news? The beer guys have the scoop.
Extra, read all about it.
Time for headlines.
All right. So while everybody was watching that weird commercial about corn syrup, AB InBev quietly acquired 100% of Right Beer. So for those who don't already know, AB InBev's XZ Ventures had previously purchased a minority stake in Right Beer back in the end of 2016. And by the way, Rate Beer is well known in the beer community. It's the third most popular beer website in the world after Untappd and Beer Advocate. Joe Tucker, the website's founder and executive director, promises that the new ownership will not influence the content of the website, but the internet is understandably skeptical about that, and the financial details of the transaction were not disclosed.
I think it's interesting that Untappd is actually ahead of Rate Beer. I know it's popular. They're the young kids out there, I think.
Well, and you think about it, every time you check into a beer, that's at least one hit on the website,
sure.
Probably.
Yeah.
And if you edit, modify, or comment, you're doing that as well.
How about that?
Yeah. Some bad news for beer lovers in Virginia. Bell's is cutting off your beer supply. That's right. Bell's is no longer taking orders from Virginia distributors, and the reasons aren't entirely clear, but they involve distribution. So Larry Bell told Brewbound that staying in the market exposes them to a lot of legal risk, and that risk could be financially devastating. There are apparently legal proceedings involving Bell's move to cut ties with a distributor who bought another distributor and the rights to Bell's distribution. And they have a history with this distributor, or more accurately, pulling out of states where that distributor buys their rights. This happened in Illinois in 2006. They pulled out to avoid being distributed by this particular distributor. So it says something. If you'd rather take a 5% sales hit than work with somebody, that's a
sure
quite it's, a statement.
I mean, in Bell's, I know they saw that. They said that's a big state for them. This is not a small move for them to pull out of there, but they sounded like they were exposing themselves to a lot of risk if they stuck around.
A big and growing state. But the good news is the employees, no employees will be laid off. Everybody's being kept on. They're just going to take the hit.
Okay. All right. Well, you're listening to the Beer Guys Radio Show. We do need to take a break, but we'll be back very soon to talk with New Glarus Brewing.
We are Reformation Brewery, celebrating the Reformer in you. Locally crafted within the renowned Etowah watershed of Woodstock, Georgia, Reformation creates yeast-forward brews full of aroma and flavor crafted to last. Come see us in beautiful Woodstock, Georgia, for a tour and tasting of unique brews that you can't find anywhere else. Reformation Brewery. Set beer free. ReformationBrewery.com.
Craft beer forged with a reverence for tradition and new styles that start a revolution. Ironmonger Brewing. The brewers at Ironmonger Brewing pride themselves at being masters of barrel-aged, hoppy, and sour beers. They invite you to their tap room in Marietta, Georgia to taste and see. Also visit their barrel room for an intimate drinking experience with great live entertainment. Keep up to date on all things Ironmonger by liking them on Facebook. Ironmonger Brewing, establishing a new standard in craft beer.
Follow the Beer Guys on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.
Next Friday is Hawaiian Shirt Day. So, you know, if you want to, go ahead and wear a Hawaiian shirt and jeans.
Now, back to the Beer Guys Radio Show.
Welcome back to the Beer Guys Radio Show. If you missed an episode, don't worry. All episodes are available as a podcast. Subscribe on your favorite podcasting app and never miss a show. We're talking with Daniel Carey, the brewmaster for New Glarus Brewing Company.
Daniel, I want to talk about your journey into craft beer, because a little different than a lot of the brewers we see today, you were decades ahead of the curve on becoming a professional brewer, right?
Well, I studied brewing in college. I went to the University of California at Davis, and I graduated in 1982. I studied brewing under Michael Lewis. I was probably one of the first people. I think I went to work in a brewery in Montana when I graduated, Kessler Brewing Company, and it was probably the ninth brewery in the country.
Wow!
And I worked there a while. Then I went over to Germany and worked at a small brewery in Germany. I did an apprenticeship as a brewer.
So what inspired you to get started on that? I mean, because you started so early, there wasn't a huge push towards craft beer or microbrews as it would be back in those
times. Yeah. That's right. I think I always liked the taste of beer, even when I was really little. Even when I was 6 years old, my dad used to drink Olympia, Oli. If you guys remember Oli.
Yes.
I just loved the taste of beer. And then whenever we went on vacation, everybody load up, and all five of the kids, we'd load up in the station wagon and go car camping somewhere. And we'd visit breweries. And breweries were the whitewashed walls and the quarry tile and the shiny copper and shiny stainless. It seemed magical to me. So I was always, I loved beer. I loved the science and art of it, the alchemy. It just seemed like such an old world romantic science and art. And I grew up in the city of San Francisco. So, I think I had Anchor Steam Beer when I was probably 14 years old, which was completely exotic experience. It's such a powerful and big beer. I mean, in those days, it was a mind-blowing. So that was kind of where I started down the road. And I thought that being a brewer, I studied brewing, wine making, and cheese making. I didn't know, growing up in San Francisco, there's a lot of wineries in Northern California, a lot of cheese factories. So I didn't know whether I was going to be a brewer, a cheese maker, or work in a winery, but I ended up going into beer.
Made the right choice there. Yeah. I remember my first taste of beer, I should say. I had an uncle that drank, I believe it was Budweiser. They used to have these little I think they were 8 ounce cans, little short cans.
Little shorty cans, yeah.
And he's in Norfolk, Virginia, and we'd go there. We'd always take the boat out. I remember being out on a hot summer day, and him and my dad had a little shorty can. And I'm like, can I get a sip of that? And he's like, sure. So I thought, I was a big dog then, man. I was like 9 or 10 years old, yeah, out with the guys on, yeah, the boat having a,
there you have it.
I believe there were actually 10 cans at that time, the hard cans. That's when crushing a can on your head meant something.
That meant something.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
You know, I can't actually remember what my first beer was. That might not surprise you too much, Tim.
It doesn't. Do you remember your last beer?
Well, I'm looking at the bottles of the table. I'm sure it's one of these.
Okay.
I'm fairly certain it was a Henry Warnhardt's Private Reserve, just because that's what the guy.
Yeah, that was a hell of a beer. That was made with Cascade hops. That was like one of the first really Cascade beers. That was. We drank that in college. That was a
solid,
good beer.
It was solid. I liked Henry Weinhart's, and eventually became an AB InBev property. But I think when I was drinking it, they were not. So
I think it's Miller. I think they're a Miller brand. I believe so.
Are they the one that's part of the it's called Brewers Alliance? Does Miller own Brewers Alliance, or is that totally separate?
I think it's
separate.
Okay. But I'm not 100% sure.
Well, Henry Weinhart's was a brewery in Portland. Indeed. And then they closed, and I could be wrong, but I thought Miller bought the brand. And I know that Jamie Emerson and Hood River Full Sail was contract brewing for them, making some really nice beers for them at one point.
That's all my territory. That's where I herald from.
Jamie Emerson and I went to a Siebel's together a long time ago, Siebel Institute. So I've known him for a long time. He's a really great brewer.
Now, you know, speaking of the Siebel Institute, we see a lot of guys these days that maybe they start off as a cellarman or even on a bottling line and just kind of work their way up, or they leave one career as a home brewer and another career and start a brewery. Do you think that going to the Siebel Institute, did that give you a leg up? Was it part of your success in starting your brewery?
Yeah. Yes. Very, very much so. At that, when I took it, it was a 13-week course, and it was taught by all of the old timers, the old brewers. And in fact, one of my teachers was started in the brewing industry at the end of Prohibition. So he was an old timer. He managed all the breweries for the Allied forces at the end of World War II. He was in the army in Germany, and someone saw on his records that he was a brewer. He worked for Falstaff, so. He ended up managing all the breweries. But so he was one of my teachers. My point being that Stiebel's was unique in that it's craft, practical brewers are the instructors. So college professors are great because you learn the science of brewing, but practical schools like Stiebel's tell you which end of a pump to hook a hose to.
You know, that brings me to a question I was curious about, because you did your education back when you did. Do you have any concept of how that formal brewing education has changed over the years since you studied? Is it roughly the same, or do you think it's improved, or do you think it's gone downhill because you don't have as many of the old timers in it?
I don't know if it'd be fair to say, you know, I'm getting old now, so things are always better in the old days, but I would say that, the education now, when I was studying brewing, you know, you wore a tie to the master brewers meetings, and they weren't certain whether they even wanted craft brewers to be members. So everything was directed towards making American style lager beers. So now brewing school and equipment and raw material suppliers are more catering towards craft brewers. So there's a lot more known about things like dry hopping. So I would say in general, it's more enthusiastic and a deeper understanding of craft beer than it used to be. I mean, we learned how to make light lagers.
Yeah, I mean, it continues to evolve in that. It's interesting to see, and we're constantly learning new things about the science of brewing. Stan Hieronymus moved to Atlanta a couple of years ago, and we've had him on the show, and we see him out at events and that, and just talking to him, Stan can talk over my head in no time flat.
Yeah, he's like a sponge. I mean, I mean, he's a writer, but he writes like a scientist. I'm really impressed with him.
Yeah, but just hearing everything that he discovers and gets into is just fascinating.
He's a great researcher, but he loves his business, and that's why. I think that's he's smart, but it's a lot of it is because he's very passionate about good beer.
And he such a nice guy. Yeah. You know, a lot of times you see people with that level of understanding and concept of the scientific things, they can't articulate that. He can.
Well, that shows when somebody really knows their subject, they can make normal people understand. When someone's talking over your head, it usually means they don't really know what they're talking about.
It does take an additional level of understanding to be able to restate things in common language, because it,
Amen.
You can easily memorize things, but to explain it in a way that a five-year-old could understand
sure.
it, very difficult.
That's right.
Yeah,
I agree 100%.
Well, Daniel, we're about out of time in this segment, but one quick thing, we're enjoying your Flanders here. And this is fantastic. It's not bracingly sour. I've had some Flanders that really get punchy.
Oh, sure.
But this is very smooth, really nice tartness. For those not familiar with the style, can you give us just a brief rundown on it?
Well, yeah, it's a brown ale. It's a sour brown ale that's common in the Flanders, the Flemish area of Belgium. It's really a offshoot of the original porters that came, the sour porters that came out of England. When England ruled the world, people would go to England to study brewing, and they brought this back to Flanders. And of course, the Belgians kind of like to figure out something and not change. So the beer has remained. There's, you know, obviously more than one style of this sour beer, but for us to make this sour Flanders beer, it's lactic and a little bit acetic, but a sour beer doesn't necessarily mean that it has to be battery acid. It should be relatively nice to drink. If you think about a champagne, a brut champagne is sour. A good dry Italian white wine, like a Pinot Grigio, it's sour. But so for me, a sour beer has to be something that I can drink a couple of pints of.
We're listening to the Beer Guys Radio Show. We do need to take a break, but we'll be back very soon to talk more with New Glarus Brewing. Brian and Tim, the beer guys. If you're like us, no lunch or dinner is complete without a pint or two of craft beer.
Which is why Truck and Tap in downtown Woodstock, Alpharetta, and Duluth are always on our list. Tim, why do they call it Truck and Tap?
Well, the tap part is easy, Brian. They've got 18 of them.
As for the truck part, that's where it gets interesting. Truck and Tap features your favorite Atlanta area food trucks, so you're getting a different menu every day.
Truck and Tap in downtown Woodstock, Alpharetta, and Duluth.
Truckandtap.com. Let them know that the beer guys sent you.
Craft beer forged with a reverence for tradition and new styles that start a revolution. Ironmonger Brewing. The brewers at Ironmonger Brewing pride themselves at being masters of barrel-aged, hoppy, and sour beers. They invite you to their tap room in Marietta, Georgia to taste and see. Also visit their barrel room for an intimate drinking experience with great live entertainment. Keep up to date on all things Ironmonger by liking them on Facebook. Ironmonger Brewing, establishing a new standard in craft beer.
Follow the Beer Guys on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Now, back to the Beer Guys Radio Show.
Shake it, bite! Woo!
Welcome back to the Beer Guys Radio Show. I want to give a quick shout out to one of our newest radio affiliates, KFAR 660 AM and 97.5 FM in Fairbanks, Alaska. Catch Beer Guys Radio on KFAR every Saturday at midnight, Alaska Standard Time. That's right. There is an Alaska Standard
there
Time.
There is. And that's 8 if you get up at 8 a.m. on Sunday, you can tune in.
On TuneIn.
Midnight in Fairbanks.
Yeah. Yes. I had no
I'm
idea.
I'm excited about
called.
This station.
Yeah.
I think it's really cool for us to be on in Fairbanks.
It's going to be great.
It's good stuff.
But now back to our conversation with Daniel Carey from New Glarus Brewing Company.
Well, Daniel, I want to talk to you about all these awards you've won. And we've looked around, and between the brewery and the beers, the list is just almost never ending. But is there an award that you've won over the years that really stood out for you? Was there something that was extremely meaningful to you?
Well, they're all meaningful. I'm, you know, flattered to receive any award, but the Russell Shear Award for innovation was probably the most notable one. Russell was a creative brewer and a really sweet guy, and it was a loss when he passed. So, and I'm in with a lot of really talented brewers to have received that award. So, that for me was probably the coolest.
I did a little reading on that, and he passed at 38, and I thought, wow, okay. I feel old. He passed in like 97, 98, something like that, at the age of 38. Amongst the people who have won the award is Mitch Steele. He won that in 2014 while at Stone. He is now at New Realm here in Atlanta, Georgia,
yes.
and Virginia Beach.
We worked together at Anheuser-Busch. Mitch and I. We had desks right next to each other.
Oh, did you? Okay.
Oh, I
did not know that. Yeah. We've talked to Mitch a little bit about kind of some of the innovative brews that he did there. And a lot of people, I don't think, know that there is innovation at Anheuser-Busch. It's not all the Budweiser being cranked out. And
sure.
Mitch speaks finally of his time there for sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, New Glarus is you've grown a little bit, I believe, since you originally opened.
Yes. Yeah,
up to, I believe, the 17th largest craft brewer. In the 17th largest craft brewer, the 25th largest overall, not just crap.
Yeah, more or less.
Overall.
Or less.
While selling your beer exclusively in Wisconsin, other than a little bit of time in Illinois. What do you think, how do you become that successful and stay, you know, just in a home state?
Well, you know, when we started out, when we started our brewery, we didn't have that intention. We sold beer in New York. We sold beer in Oregon and in Illinois. But as we grew, dealing with wholesalers so far away, you know, you mentioned in earlier about Bell's in Virginia, wholesalers' relationships can be difficult. And my wife is the one who's the president of our brewery. She does all marketing and sales related things. And she was driving. She's the one who had to travel to do sales in places like Chicago. And our children were young and she was on the road a lot, going in and out of bars. And a place like Chicago at that time was pretty much people wanted beer for free. And we were growing and she said, you know, rather than spending money on adding capacity, which is expensive, let's just pull out of all of those markets and sell in our home state. It'll be easier. It's more of what I want to do. And it was like an epiphany moment for her. And people at that time thought we were crazy. She got all kinds of hate mail and wholesalers.
I can imagine.
They wanted their spotted cow.
Yeah, exactly. So, I think it was a brilliant move on Deb's part. She's really good. I always say the thing about Deb, she would be a really great military officer because, you know, when the bullets start flying, most of us panic. And it's really funny that the louder the chaos, the more bullets, the clearer she thinks. And she's really good being clear in the clutter and chaos. And I think she saw this years before anybody that really you're better off building strong relationships with local wholesalers and more importantly with local customers, because if the people ask for the beer, the wholesalers will follow.
So you were ahead of the game on the whole drink local scene as well, actually, when you think about it.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's 100% Deb.
So is there, at this point, it's kind of a thing, and there's no chance you'll ever distribute out of Wisconsin. Is that right? Or is there ever a scenario where
I would say no, I don't see it. I don't imagine it. I would never say never. You know, sometimes you have to eat your words, but we don't have any plans to sell out of the state of Wisconsin. We're so iconic for Wisconsin, and our beer is on draft in, I don't know, 90, 80, 90% of the taverns in the state. So we're deep. We've worked our sales team, not me, but Deb and our sales team have worked really, really hard to make that happen. And it's not because of any shenanigans. It's just simply that when the beer is put on tap, it sells. And then it stays on tap.
Yeah, I think it's just fascinating to see that, you know, we have Sweetwater here in Georgia. That's
sure.
Known as Georgia's beer, Atlanta's beer, but not like New Glarus, in Wisconsin. You know, I think everybody drinks, you know, Spotted Cow it's the go-to beer. It's, you know, there's people in Georgia that drink Sweetwater and they know it as Georgia beer, but they may drink several other things. I get the impression from talking to people, there are people that are Spotted Cow drinkers, that's their beer. That's their go-to.
Yeah, right? It is. And we've always, I was a brewer in Germany, an apprentice brewer, and my wife and daughters came with me. We lived in Germany and we were really impressed by the old breweries that sold around the smokestack, you know, breweries in Germany, like even you look at Augustiner, most of their beer is sold in Munich. Okay, they do sell other places. They do sell around Germany, but they do most of their business around in Munich and around Munich. And we envisioned ourselves as somebody that we should be in business for 300 years. We're not trying to grow for the sake of growth. It's like farming. You know, you could slash and burn, but if you are take care of your land, take care of your local environment, you can be sustainable. That's always been our dream.
Well, that was something, Daniel, that I looked at, looking at the growth and popularity and, you know, when your brewery was founded, I was thinking, I know there had to be a point where they were approached to be bought. And sure enough, I found you did have an offer from AB InBev and chose to pass on that. Why did you choose to pass on selling to AB InBev?
We've had more than one. We've had many such inquiries, and the reason is because right now 120 employees, and we have very, very low turnover. We have a turnover rate of about 1%, and all of these people that work here have bought houses and have car payments and children and built their life around this business. So we have a moral responsibility to them. If we sold the brewery to somebody else, venture capitalist or anybody, they could certainly slash and burn, and it would be the benefit to them, but not to the community nor our employees. So number one, we did it to protect our employees, again, because we want the brewery to be around for many, many years. And we feel that if we're strong and tight in our economics of how we run our business and take care of our people, that we can all survive together. And, you know, if we sold the brewery, we would get a bunch of money. But I know this kind of sounds crazy, but once if your feet are dry, your back is strong, and your stomach is full, what else do you need? I mean, how many nice cars do you need? How many nice houses? How many trips do you need? What are you going to do once you've traveled around the world? What are you going to do once you've bought six Maseratis? I mean, eventually
by number seven, that's it becomes,
I have some ideas.
Well, yeah, I mean, it sounds like true, like, well, I just go golfing every day, but eventually you're going to get bored, and it's shallow and hollow, and people are like dogs. They need a purpose. They need to do something, and you need to add value, or otherwise you're kind of useless.
Makes sense to me.
I'm not a fan of rich people.
I would be if I was one. So you're listening to the Beer Guys Radio Show. We do need to take a break, but we'll be back very soon to talk more with New Glarus Brewing. Brian and Tim, the Beer Guys. If you're like us, no lunch or dinner is complete without a pint or two of craft beer.
Which is why Truck and Tap in downtown Woodstock, Alpharetta, and Duluth are always on our list. Tim, why do they call it Truck and Tap?
Well, the tap part is easy, Brian. They've got 18 of them.
As for the truck part, that's where it gets interesting. Truck and Tap features your favorite Atlanta area food trucks, so you're getting a different menu every day.
Truck and Tap in downtown Woodstock, Alpharetta, and Duluth.
Truckandtap.com. Let them know that the Beer Guys sent you.
Craft beer forged with a reverence for tradition and new styles that start a revolution. Ironmonger Brewing. The brewers at Ironmonger Brewing pride themselves at being masters of barrel-aged, hoppy, and sour beers. They invite you to their tap room in Marietta, Georgia to taste and see. Also visit their barrel room for an intimate drinking experience with great live entertainment. Keep up to date on all things Ironmonger by liking them on Facebook. Ironmonger Brewing. Establishing a new standard in craft beer.
Follow the Beer Guys on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.
Cannonball coming.
Now, back to the Beer Guys Radio Show.
Welcome back to the Beer Guys Radio Show. If you enjoy the show, please consider supporting us on Patreon. Just go to patreon.com/beerguys. Patrons can get some cool perks like Beer Guys swag and commercial-free episodes. And now back to our conversation with Daniel Carey from New Glarus Brewing Company.
Daniel, there's something I just absolutely have to ask you because of our location here and a fun little tidbit, a trivia tidbit that I found when looking up information on New Glarus Brewing. So New Glarus wasn't the one and only choice or when you went to open your brewery, you did look at a couple other locations. And I saw that one of those locations was actually here in Atlanta, Georgia. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's right. It would have been in 1992. And I had worked for a company building breweries. So I traveled all over the country building breweries. And my wife had worked with me at a brewery doing marketing and label design. And so we had seen lots of breweries by that time. And I knew lots of brewers, and I had seen, we had seen what was successful, what wasn't successful. And so when my wife said she wanted for me to leave Anheuser-Busch and for us to start our own brewery, she had a list of things that would make a good city for a brewery. And so we looked at Madison, Wisconsin, Atlanta, Georgia, and Belleville, Washington as the three best choices, because at that time, those towns didn't have a lot of breweries. They had a relatively well-educated and affluent and well-traveled population. And that those were the things that seemed to be required at that time for a brewery to be successful.
Yeah, that's something. If you had opened here in 93, you would be a contender for the oldest brewery in the state. Because I believe Atlanta Brewing Company now, but previously Red Brick, previously Atlanta Brewing Company, yeah. is 25. And they're the oldest oldest continuous or oldest still in operation brewery
in
the state of Georgia right now. Well, interesting.
How different do you think that your brewery would be had you taken the jump into Atlanta?
Boy, I don't know. You know, my wife is from Wisconsin. She's from Milwaukee. So coming back here, we really like living here. And I would imagine if we had gone to Atlanta, we probably would have built out in the country around Atlanta. And, you know, maybe we would have ended up doing the same thing, be a Georgia-only beer. And maybe instead of making beers with cherry, we'd be making beers with peaches.
Georgia peaches, yeah.
You know, I was just thinking because we have a little German town called Helen that people go up to for
October. Oh, yeah, yeah.
I'm guessing you would have been Helen Brewing Company.
Yeah,
I'm sure that
yeah,
somehow
that's
it
probably
would have
right.
magically happened that you opened up out there.
That's probably what would have happened in an alternate universe, maybe.
Yes,
absolutely.
Another timeline.
You know, speaking of beer, let's get back to beer. We just finished drinking some Serendipity, and I'm just in love with that beer. Tell us a little bit about it.
Well, we brew beers in the Belgian tradition of fruit beer. And we started out making a beer with cherries called Belgian Red. We use Wisconsin-grown cherries in that beer. And then we came out with a beer after that with red raspberries from Oregon. We used to live in Oregon, so we knew raspberries from Oregon. And then 1 year, there was a crop failure due to repeated frosts here in Wisconsin. So rather than getting cherries from another place, because our label says Wisconsin cherries, we weren't able to make our Belgian Red that year. And so in order not to lose our shelf space, we got about, I don't know, 20% of what we had contracted for. So my wife said, come up with something else. So I was able to find cranberries and apples here in Wisconsin. So we came up with a third beer, Serendipity. And I think, you know, obviously Serendipity means a happy coincidence, or so it was. We tried to turn a bad situation into good, turn lemons into lemonade, so to speak.
I think you did it successfully.
It seemed to work out, right? Yeah.
Seriously, one of my favorite beers of yours. And it's,
oh, cool.
It's really hard, tough competition with what we've had so far. But
now we've drank through a few or a couple sours that you have here today. And one thing I did want to mention, you were decades or at least a decade ahead of anyone else as far as sour beer in the U.S. goes. I can't remember exactly when that, like, Cantillon and those started to come in, but what made you decide to start sour beer brewing when you did in the U.S., and what was the initial reception to offering sour beers?
Well, we started making soured beers in oak tanks. People nowadays call them fooders, but since I'm American, I call them oak tanks. We bought a couple of tanks from the Rodney Strong Winery in Russian River, California, and we started to make sour beer in 1994. So I believe that we are the first American brewers to purchase and install and start using oak tanks for the production of sour beers in 1994. And where that came from, I told you that I was an apprentice brewer in Germany, and we had, and that was, that would have been in 1986. So that was before really the, all the Americans went to start to go to Belgium. And we had gone to Belgium, and we visited in Lindemann's brewery. And Lindemann's brewery at that point was basically an old farm. And Rennie Lindemann, the father, who's now pretty much retired, but he was a young man at that time. And I was there with my wife and two daughters, and we drove up in the rain and knocked on the door. And I said, "Hey, hi, I'm an American brewer. Can I see your brewery?" And he said, "Sure, come on in." And he spent the day with us, and we walked around the brewery. The old brewery, you know, he's got a newer brewery now, but it was wood or coal-fired brew kettle, and it was an old rustic lambic brewery. And he basically showed us how he made lambic beer, how he made sour beer, how he made fruit beer. Because in those days, I mean, you know, a crazy American shows up at your door. Nowadays, that would never happen, but it got me thinking, you know. And so I went home in 1986, and I started to make this beer, and I had all kinds of carboys in our attic at our house, and finally I hit upon a recipe that was really good. And that's when Deb said, "Hey, you know what, let's build a brewery so you can make fruit beer." And the rest is history.
So that brings me to something that I've read about these caves. Or do you have a wild sour cave or a fruit
cave?
Yeah,
well, when we first started to make fruit beer, it was in the corner of the brewery, of our regular brewery. And so we had separate hoses and pumps and stuff, but it was literally in our brewery. And so it limited how much beer we could make. And at that point, people didn't really like sour beer that much, so it was self-limiting. And then in about 2012, sour beers really started to take off, and by that time we really understood how to brew lambics and sour browns, etc., fruit beers. So we said, you know what, let's take a chance and build a separate building, and instead of just having two tanks, let's put in 20 tanks. Our old brewery is in a floodplain, and it's on the side of a cliff. So we dug into the cliff, and we put a grass roof on top of this building and filled it with oak tanks, and started to make more and more sour beer. So as the market has grown, we've felt more confident in doing this. So we call it our wild fruit cave, but we make all of our fruit beers in there. We make a lambic style beer. We call it a sour American ale. We make our Flanders, our sour browns, our old Bruins in this room. So all of the sour beers, all of the nasty bugs, the Brettanomyces, the Brett and the Lactobacillus, they all live in this building, which is completely separated from our brewery.
That seems like a smart way to go.
Yeah.
So I do want to ask this, Daniel, as we're wrapping up here. Fruit flavors in beer. Brian and I have done some home brewing. It can be really difficult to capture the true essence of a fruit in a homebrew beer or any brewed beer. Yes. What are some tips you would give either a homebrewer or a pro brewer on the best way to capture those true fruit flavors?
Well, number one, you need good fruit. And a lot of it. And I always think, I can't say too much because I've spent my career trying to figure it out. But I, as I mentioned in the beginning of the show, I studied winemaking in college. So having an understanding of how wine is made, I think, is probably the biggest clue that I can give. You know, if you think about Belgium, it's between the beers of Germany and the wines of France. So it kind of makes sense that they have both influences.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. Well, Daniel, thanks so much for joining us. If people want to keep up with what's happening with New Glarus, where should they go?
NewGlarusBrewing.com.
Daniel, yep. Thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate
it. My pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
Yes, sir. That about wraps it up for this episode of the Beer Guys Radio Show. Coming up next week, we're getting crazy, Brian. We're going to be talking with Athletic Brewing Company, and they are a brewery that specializes in non-alcoholic craft beers.
What?
Yes, I know. For more craft beer info, follow us online. We are Beer Guys Radio on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Thanks again for tuning in. Have a great week, and don't forget to drink local. Cheers.
The Beer Guys Radio Show on the Beer Guys Radio Network. BeerGuysRadio.com.
Duke's Mayo. Do you get it? Because only the ones that get it really get it. Your friends get it. Your mom gets it. Your grandma gets it. Your neighbors get it. Sometimes a dog gets it. Get out of there. What else? Your potato salads get it. BLTs get it. Tailgates get it. And restaurants get it too. By now, even you probably get it. So get it today. Made without any sugar since 1917, Duke's is that little southern something that makes good things better. Get Duke's. It's got twang.